Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Pius.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. No Ryan tonight, just me and what? Just the original crew.
Yeah, and just this, just the best. Yep. I got nothing.
Well, so what we're doing here is we're doing a mini show. We are going to just talk about two games, so it might be an abbreviated show. We'll see how long we go here.
But where is Ryan tonight, anyways?
Ryan is in a sleazy motel. He decided that working 12 hours a day wasn't enough, so he's working a night shift at a sleazy motel, just exterminating, just mashing all the bugs in the vacant rooms. So
that was not what I was expecting when you said sleazy motel.
he's turning tricks, but not, you know, in the way that a prostitute would. He's just trying to make some extra cash.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's an upstanding citizen. He's productive. He's trying to be on the front lines here. So what we're going to do is we are sparing him conversations about RPGs. The two games we got on tap are Final Fantasy VII, the remake, which you've been playing a bit. And
yep, a little bit.
And I finished off Trials of Mana. So I will give us some closing thoughts on that one so that we spare Ryan our talks about, you know, systems and materia and all that stuff that he'll just fall asleep for anyway. We'll save. We'll make him suffer through Xenoblade, but we'll spare him this.
Oh yeah, he's going to tolerate that one. Which I did watch a video on it.
Oh yeah,
The other day. Yeah, just a brief trailer popped up on my YouTube feed, so I watched the Xenoblade thing. I was like, yeah. It definitely does have a visual revamp or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely does look like an old Wii game still. You're like,
come on.
I've got to play it. I'm in. But yeah, it doesn't look as smooth as Chronicles 2.
I think it looks better than Chronicles 2.
What?
Oh yeah.
No.
Oh yeah.
No.
Anyway, we don't have to debate over that. I think it looks really good. But this is an important episode for another reason. We have a returning element of the show. I'm going to be putting music in here again. Our past few podcasts have just been spoken because we've been working with Audacity, which I've never edited in. But now that I've gotten a better feel for some of the basic tools that I'll be using the most, I'm able to get music back in here. So barring
you should wait the call. You should wait. You're like calling your shot in baseball. Like, just wait until to see if it happens, all right? You don't know if you're going to...
It's like you're reading my brain, because I was about to put a caveat on there. Unless something disastrous happens, or I'm more incompetent than I think. Because there is that slim chance that... I post this show with no music because I'm not able to figure it out. But I think I got it. I think I got it.
About to say, calm down, Ruth. It's going to be all right.
So where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Final Fantasy VII or Trials of Mana?
We'll knock out Trials. Go for it. Okay. We'll see how Trials goes. Because that's a little bit more relevant. I would think people would want to hear about that more than 7 on our podcast.
Yeah, it is a Switch game. It's also out on PS4, but Final Fantasy VII Remake is not on Switch. I think Nintendo enthusiasts can look forward to playing Final Fantasy VII Remake on the next system, because it will not be on Switch.
No.
There is also the possibility that it stays exclusive to Sony systems, because Sony and Square, especially when it comes to mainline Final Fantasy, are still pretty buddy-buddy.
Yeah, it's probably going to be an exclusive.
Well, there's...
Which, I'm fine with that.
Well, of course you are. Yeah. But they're, what was it, Final Fantasy 13 ended up making the jump to other consoles as well, the other console, I suppose, at the time. Mm-hmm. And Final Fantasy 15 was multi-platform, wasn't it?
Possibly. I don't know.
I think it was. The Pocket Edition ended up coming to Switch, which, great, thanks. But anyway, Trials of Mana is a remake of the Super Nintendo game, as we've discussed at length before. I discussed some of the differences and the similarities when we did the official show, so I'm not going to go too deep into those details. But just kind of some thoughts wrapping up the game. I'm positive on it. There are some things where, you know, even though it's a remake, it is showing its age just in terms of the design and the progression. Side quests are nearly non-existent. There are a few things that you can do. For example, it's laid out like an old school RPG. You have towns and you have like little routes that you go through. You know, it's almost structured like Pokemon, where you have routes connecting different towns and no real big overworld, but you do get at a certain point in the game the ability to fly, which allows you to go to any like town or major like dungeon area that you've been to before.
If there's no side quest though, what is the benefit of going back to old places like that though?
So the benefit, well, if you need to go back to a town to like stock up on consumable items, potions, antidotes, that sort of thing, or there are a couple of little small side quests that you can do. For example, there's like this little cactus dude, almost looks like a Cactar, with like a big bulbous head, that will pop up on different routes, and when you get to a certain point in the game, it will tell you if there's one in a particular route or not. And the more of him you find, the more bonuses that you get in battle. And there's 50 of them scattered throughout the entire game, and you'll get things like, once you found enough, staying at inns will be free. You'll get like 20% discounts at shops. Your like super move meter will be like 50% full at the start of every battle. So you know you get some pretty good advantages. Randomly, you get like a 30% boost to your, or sorry, not 30%, a three times, like a 300% boost to your experience in a battle, randomly when you finish the battle, once you found enough of this guy. So, you know, you get some pretty substantial benefits to finding all of these things. So that's one side quest. And the other side quest is more of like a loot grind or an item gathering kind of thing. There are little seeds that you find throughout the game, and they're ranked normal, gold, silver, rainbow. And when you plant them in a flower pot that's inside every inn,
you can get berries from them once a day.
You can get your Leppa berries and your citrus berries, yeah?
Yeah. You go make your Pokeballs at the berry guy.
What you end up getting from these is a couple of different things. You can either get a consumable item, or you can get something that will just give you like a stat buff, like to keep the Pokemon comparison going, like a Carbo or a Protein, just something that's going to give you a buff to a stat. Or you can get like super equipment. A lot of like your best like end game armor and equipment is going to come from just harvesting these things and planting them. And that's not something that you really have to spend a whole lot of time grinding. Like, I didn't grind for these things. I just kind of like went through the game and I like played at a normal pace, and I ended up finding a lot of end game gear and materials just on happenstance. I didn't the more seeds that you plant in this flower pot, the more it will level up and give you better stuff. I didn't max it out, but I was pretty close by the end of the game with zero grinding. I think that's one of the things to the game's benefit, is it doesn't really require much grinding. And that is a benefit, because grinding is something that can be very monotonous in like an action-based RPG like this. Just kind of like beating up weaker enemies over and over again for like those small bits of experience. But it does say something about one of the weaknesses of the battle system, in that a lot of the bosses you can get through just like hacking at them over and over again. And that, I didn't even have a healer in my party, so I was dependent on items to do all of my like revivals and status ailment restorations and things like that, not to mention just the basic HP restorations. But most of the bosses, like, you hack at them, and it will, like, do a move where you kind of, like, do your dodge times to get out of the way, and it'll, like, show you, like, the radius of danger, like, if it's going to be in a path. And it'll also, like, have, like, almost like a clock to tell you when it's going to strike, to give you time to get out of the way. And then when it does a super move, it will usually, like, deploy, like, decoys or substitutes to keep the Pokemon theme going. And if you take out those substitutes before it pulls off the super move, it dazes the enemy, and you're able to hit it with your super moves. And like the more like combos that you pull off, and like combos just to take that side note, are very much like a Dynasty Warriors game. It's just like hitting weak, strong, and there you go, you got a combo. Or like...
Okay, so it's like a pattern or a moveset, kind of.
Right, but it's not nearly as complex as something like a Bayonetta, where it's like, you know, you go weak, strong, strong, weak. It's always going to be like X number of weak attacks followed by a strong attack, and that's your combo.
Okay.
So it's not a very deep system in that respect. But the more of those combos you pull off, the more of like your super move meter that you're building up, and having those super moves available for when a boss is dazed will give you a substantial amount of damage. But like as far as actual like strategy and builds go facing a boss, like there are elemental weaknesses, and I went with the thief character who does a lot of like status ailments and stat debuff type of moves. They didn't really pay off all that much. And one of my other characters was the like a Valkyrie or a Dragoon type of character. And she had a lot of skills based on buffing up your character, like giving like a 30% bonus to your attack or defense, just standard status buffs. And those didn't really seem all that necessary either.
I mean, a game like this, it seems like it's mostly like who's fun to you to use, sure. Not who's necessary.
And that's a good point, because you do have that that party selection at the beginning where, you know, you have to pick your three characters, so they have to tune the entire game so that you can get through the game with any combination of three characters. So that sort of they have to mitigate the necessity for things like elemental alignments, because what if you don't take a character that can do that sort of thing? And I like, for example, my Black Mage character, she ended up being one of the most useful characters, because like Black Magic, having those elemental alignments and using Black Magic just mows down your like standard rando enemies. I found myself like playing through it, like thinking about the Final Fantasy XII Gambit system, and we've come down very hard on Final Fantasy XII, and it's all justified. Final Fantasy XII is not a very good game.
No.
But one thing from Final Fantasy XII that I wish had gotten incorporated in Trials of Mana is that ability to more finely tune what you want your characters doing. You do get a little bit, and see, the thing is, like in Trials of Mana, one of the good things about the game, to the game's credit, the AI is actually pretty decent. They'll do things like heal themselves, they'll attack the same enemies that you're attacking, and you can kind of tune that as well. You can tell them to not attack the same enemies if you don't want to. They'll use correct elemental alignments, they'll buff up at good times and late, and like lay down like your protection spells and things. Something that that I did with my Black Mage character is I built her using like the skills that she was unlocking to conserve as much MP as possible, like have spells cost as little as possible, and give her as many skills as she could that would restore her MP automatically, so she could just cast spells the whole time. And I had her set to just use all of your MP. Just doesn't matter. Take it all the way down to zero. Just keep on casting. But she still wasn't casting very much in boss fights. And that's when I wanted her casting the most. Just keep on fucking laying down the spells. It's just what you're good at. Just do it. So that's,
well, you can't like shift control then during it, or yeah. You just wanted to standalone character.
Yeah, you can shift control on the fly in battle, which I did at some points, so I could just lay down a ton of spells. There was one boss fight in particular that I remember. Like he was weak to fire, and she wasn't using any fire magic. So when I got to the end of the fight, it's like, nope, shift over to her. He's got 25 HP left. Cast these fire spells over and over again, and 12 seconds later he was dead. So like, just I wish that there's like that Final Fantasy XII method of just finely tuning, like all you do is cast spells, don't do anything else. I can handle the rest of it, just keep on laying down the damage. Because there are like different builds that you can do, like I mentioned, like the MP conservation build that I was using on the Black Mage. I had my thief set up to lay down as many status ailments as possible and like try to do a lot of crit damage, because there's a lot of synergy between like him being able to crit enemies that had a status ailment on them. And you get these different skills by leveling up, and when you level up, You get points for... There's a skill tree. There's a skill tree in the game, and you're basically like assigning skill points to your different attributes, like your attack, your defense, magic attack, magic defense, and HP. And along with buffing up those stats will also be skills associated with... Or not HP, your luck. There will be skills associated with that attribute as you're leveling it up. And a lot of times, like, if you're using a mage character, in order to get all the different sort of elemental spells, you'll need to spread the skill points around and fill in as much of the tree as you can. So, just to stick with my black mage character, for example, in order for her to learn fire magic, you needed to buff up her strength. And in order for you to learn, like, lightning magic, you needed to buff up her luck. So,
huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, there isn't a, like, she wouldn't get, like a plus 10 to her strength at any point, but what buffing up her strength did do was allow her to learn those other skills. So it was kind of like an either-or situation. So for, like, my Valkyrie character, my Dragoon character, in her strength, there weren't any, like, real spells for her to learn. So a lot of her, like, nodes in her skill tree were just, like, plus 5 to strength, plus 10 to strength. And just, like, made her, like, a wrecking ball. So, I like that system better than what they had in the original game, because in the original game it was just assign stat points to any given stat, and in order to level up your magic, to learn better magic, you just had to use that magic over and over again, and there was no real like way to tell how far you've progressed, like how much more you needed to cast fire magic to get upgraded fire magic. So it's a much more transparent system and a way that you can more heavily customize these characters to the way you, and tune them to the way you want them to be. But getting back to my original point about one of the drawbacks of that sort of system is no boss requires you to have a very finely tuned character. I playing through the game, I get the feeling that you could just kind of throw skill points at anything and not really have a specific build, and you'll be able to get through this game just fine on the normal difficulty level, because they have to have everything sort of generic for any combination of these six characters. So I like that they have the different characters and each have like their class specialties, but it's probably tough from a design point to then tune the game to, like, okay, they picked these three characters, let's shuffle things around so that it requires them to use strategies for those characters effectively.
Yeah, that would be a little rough.
Yeah, that's a tall order, especially for a game like this. This was not Square Enix's big budget game for the month of April. You know, there was another game that came out in the month of April from Square Enix that probably had much more resources devoted to it.
Just a couple.
And ironic,
a couple.
And
a little bit.
Appropriately enough, another remake. How about that?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
We're clearly talking about Final Fantasy VII here,
yes,
right? Okay.
So, I think that that pretty well covers it for the most part for Trials of Mana. I did come away with it pretty positive. I think it is well worth a play at some point if you're interested in these sort of action RPGs, because it is an action RPG. There's no like turn taking or anything like that. This is very much like hack and slash your way through it. Mika did start up her own game. She started up a new file.
Oh.
She played a little bit of my file, like when I would go, like I went through a route and she'd want to play if I was fairly confident that, you know, I was beating up the little rando enemies efficiently enough. I'm like, okay, yeah, you can have a turn. And she'd play through and like hack her way through a couple of enemies. She doesn't quite have the hang of like adjusting the camera to like look where you want to go just yet. You know, she'll get there at some point, but you know, it's still quite a bit for her to grasp. She's 6 years old.
But she's gonna be your little gamer.
She started up her own file, and there are four difficulty levels in this game. It's beginner, easy, normal, hard. And I set it on beginner because, you know, she is a beginner. She started up, she took the Dragoon character, the Valkyrie, and she took the generic warrior dude and then the werewolf dude. So, Kevin, if you remember me talking about him when I talked about the Super Nintendo version.
Just plain Kevin.
Yeah, he's a werewolf named Kevin. Like, there's... there's the so the characters in this game, there's the thief named Hawkeye, and there's the Valkyrie named Reese, and there's the warrior dude named Durad, and there's the werewolf boy named Kevin.
Oh, that's so good.
And the black name is named Angela, just for the record. And there's this white mage girl who does like a lot of baby talks. Like her R's are all W's, and they fully voice act it, which it just has to be nails on a chalkboard if you're playing through as that character. And her name is Charlotte. And when I played the Super Nintendo version, I took this character because I thought it needed a healer. As I've mentioned multiple times, this remake, if you're playing just on normal difficulty mode, does not require a healer. I was fully stocked on restorative items at the end of the game, and it was totally fine. Like, I'm really glad I did not take a white mage with me, because it was so much faster just having two characters who could pummel out damage. But yeah, so Mika started her file, and she got a little frustrated at the beginning because she wanted her entire party with her. And like, you try to explain, like, well, no, you gotta play a little bit of the game, and then you'll get your friends to join you. And she's almost at the point where she's about to get one party member. So, you know, hopefully at that point she'll, you know, settle into it a little bit. Or maybe she won't. We'll see. I don't see, like, this ending with her, like, seeing credits on the game.
Oh, gosh, that would be so great. Six-year-old beats Trials of Mana. Come on. That would be amazing.
She could do it. She could do it. Like, when she started up the game, this Valkyrie character has pretty good HP at the start. Like, over 100 hit points. And
HP?
Excuse me. Thank you. HP.
I had tea in my mouth, so I couldn't stop you sooner.
Has over 100 HP at the beginning of the game, and the enemies that she was fighting were doing like one damage to her. So like, she was like trying to flee from battle. Like, no, Mika, just beat them up. You'll be fine. You'll be totally fine. So I think she was a little...
Yeah, that's what we want to teach our children.
Just... if there are ninjas in your castle, you beat them up. Yes.
Yeah, you take them out.
Anyway.
You make their children orphans.
So yeah, that's Trials of Mana.
Yeah.
So Final Fantasy VII.
Final Fantasy VII's a game, and I am almost 3 hours in. I'm not very far. I pretty much just
that's like
played 10, through.
It's like 10%.
I don't know how much of the game there is.
It's like a 30-hour.
They really stretched this game out. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But I pretty much just played through the first reactor, so it follows the original pretty nicely there. First time you see Cloud, he's on the train, and he hops off the train, and he's on the walkway, and off you go on your first mission, which is nice. And yeah, it's just go and take out this reactor, and then get back to base. Which, the combat is fine. It's I like it. It's very fast-paced. Every character has essentially two different modes for attacking. Not auto attacks. There's no auto attacks. You actually like press a button. But he has two different modes for it. Like, Cloud has his regular attack, and then he has another one where he lifts the sword up, and he moves slowly, and he does faster, rapid strikes. And then Barrett, he's the only other character you play with, and he gets, like, a charge gunshot, that's it. But it's very fast-paced. It looks very, very pretty. It's a very good-looking game.
So you only get the two party members at the start, just like the original.
Yeah.
Do you get
which took a while. You were Cloud for a while, and it was funny because it was pretty much whenever enemies showed up, all of them would be like, "All right, this is your job," and they'll just run off and leave you alone with all the enemies.
Like, get back here, Bigly like, Wedge, you bums!
Thanks, guys. Like, this is what you're here for, jerks.
So
no, it's fine. I'll deal with these 10 dudes by myself. You got guns. It's fine.
So you get Baird in there in the first mission. Do you get any materia at the start of the game?
You start off with fire.
So how does materia work in this game?
So you have your regular auto attacks. So you can move around, you can do auto attacks. There's even a button you can hold or press to block attacks. So you take less damage. Like, you see attack coming, you can just put up a block real quick for it. But while you're doing your attacks and everything, you actually have an active time bar filling, like the original game. And it fills, I'm guessing, off your auto attacks or taking damage or whatever. It just fills. And there's actually two bars. And whenever a bar is filled, you can press, I think, X. and it brings up a menu like in Final Fantasy. You get your ability magic items. And you can spend one of those bars in order to use one of those options.
Now, is that... Does the action pause when you bring up that menu, or is it still going?
I think it's very, very slow.
Okay.
So it just slows to a very faint crawl. Mm-hmm. It pretty much is a pause. But your abilities, like Cloud has two. He actually has Braver. His first limit break is a regular ability. And then he has another one where he just does like this thrust, and it's like a gap close.
So are there actually limit breaks, or is this like a new ATB sort of replacing that?
You have a separate bar for limit breaks, and it took me until the first boss to actually like unlock it. Like, I couldn't fill up a limit break bar until the first boss, or if it was filling, I didn't notice.
Hmm.
And it just briefly goes into, not like a cutscene, but a briefly thing and watches them do the limit, and then you're back into the fight. Which Cloud just starts with cross chop. That's his limit break first. I haven't seen Barrett's. I haven't done his. But the boss fight you're doing that is really intense. And it's that first, that scorpion boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very... There was a lot going on in that boss fight. It's like, it was a very long room, and he's jumping from one side to the other. At one point, he's on the wall, and you gotta just stay alive. You have to dodge all this crap on the ground that he's dropping and bombing you with. It was a lot going on in that fight. They really added a lot there. And, like, machine enemies, they even added a... Well, for all enemies, they even added a stagger opponent where they have their own stagger bar. That if you fill it up, they'll take extra damage and I think briefly stun them for a second. So they have their own separate stagger bar.
How do you fill that?
Just beating them or just wailing on them or using their weakness. Like, machine enemies are weak to lightning. And Barrett has the lightning materia. So you just hit them with lightning and then cause them to stagger and then you just get a little more damage in. There's something else to pay attention.
Back to materia, can you move them around like you could in the original?
Yes, you do have equipment slots kind of like the original. There isn't much right now because I haven't gotten any different equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But there are different like swords and guns and armor and your accessory. You do have an accessory. After the first mission, Jesse walks up to you and goes, "Here's Cure." And you're like, "All right, thanks." And now I have the Cure spell.
That would have been helpful, as I was getting my butt kicked.
Barrett had it, but I was spending all of his MP on lightning. Mm. So it just wasn't... So there's still light MP you need to manage on top of the time bar.
So you have to fill up the bar in order to use your materia, yeah?
Yes, and then it still costs MP.
Oh, okay. I figured that would have replaced MP.
No, because you still use the bar, the active time bar, to use an ability, like mm-hmm. one of your regular attacks, and they don't cost anything but a bar. And Barrett has like a couple of different, like one I think boosts his defense and stuff. I didn't really use them much other than the spiders over there. Switch to Barrett so I can shoot him. Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of like that situation.
So you can just like flip to other characters on the fly.
Yes, in mid-battle there's a separate button just to toggle between characters.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty quick and simple. Actually, did we get Tifa for a bit? No, I did not use Tifa at all.
Yeah, because unless they change like the narrative, because she doesn't like go on the first mission.
No. Which, the first mission, not a whole lot happened that was really that surprising. There was a couple of extra rooms you're going to. You had to move around. You had to get out with the timer. It was pretty similar, just stretched out a little further.
So as far as equipment goes, is it just a weapon accessory still, or is there more to it?
Well, in the original there was
that was weapon accessory.
I thought there was a third weapon accessory. You had your weapon, you had like kind of like your armor accessory kind of thing, and then you had another accessory that could be like poison resistance, that kind of crap. Like your neck or whatever. There's a third thing in that one.
I'm going to have to boot up the game to see what it actually is. But I'm...
You couldn't equip materia into this. No. There's two things you can get for materia, which is your weapon and your accessory. And then there was a third thing that was like things to... Like status things. Like a poison resistance or something else.
I don't remember that. I'm going to have to look at it, because like, as far as like putting materia into slots, it was just the weapon and accessory. I don't remember the third thing. But like, because what you would do is, if you wanted poison resistance, you would just put poison magic in your armor plus added effect or elemental. No, added effect.
Yeah. I think that was another thing. I could be wrong. I can't remember. Clearly, last time I played it was over a week ago.
Clearly, like, the both of us have... Oh, I'm talking about the original.
Yeah, I'm talking about both of them.
Okay. Oh, so you played a bit of the original.
Yeah, I have the original. I was playing through that. I have Eris, the platform has fallen. We're now back at her place looking for Marlene.
Mm-hmm.
A whole thing, which I'm not that far in the actual story. So what takes place after the first mission, the reactor blows up, and spoilers with this, because this is the first like big change in the story. The reactor goes up, but instead of just being like a little explosion and it stops working, there's a small scene where you see Shinra purposely targeting using turrets and things to blow up the reactor further. So it looks like Avalanche did this big thing. Like, the whole reactor blows up and it's chaos in the entire district. Like, it's nuts. Like, buildings are falling over, there's crap in the streets, like, it's madness.
So Shinra's look like they're being more like eco-terrorists who don't really care if anyone else gets hurt in the process.
Yeah, kind of thing. I'm guessing. I don't know. But it was after that you separate and you go through a time where you're just Cloud and you're going through the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And they're changing the story in a way to compensate for certain things. Like, in the first time you've seen Sephiroth is quite a while into disc one.
Yeah,
it's not pretty straightforward.
You get a little glimpse of him before you leave Midgar.
A little bit, but that's like before you leave Midgar. So they're like, crap, how are we gonna get Sephiroth in this game?
But he's
Cloud's now having like memory issues and flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And he's like seeing Sephiroth walking around the streets. He's having fake conversations with the dude. And like, all right, like this is.
And in the original, he has like his little fainting spells. A couple of times, but you don't really know what it's all about. And Sephiroth is more of like a presence. You don't really, there's no like interaction. You see like the effects of Sephiroth rather than like actually seeing what he's actually doing.
Yeah. And that's kind of what's going on here. Like, Cloud chases him down an alley and he has a fake conversation with them. And then like a really weird thing happens. The first time you see Eris, she's like swatting in the air at nothing. So she runs up and grabs Cloud. And when she touches him, he now sees what she sees and has these weird, like, cloaked ghost things flying around.
Huh.
So I don't know what these are. That wasn't in the original. So this is an added thing they've threw in. And then you just go your separate ways. Like, it was just really weird. You Shinra guys show up and Eris is like, alright, bye, and then you have to fight your way out of the area. Like, it's just really weird stuff.
Well, there's something more going on with that character in this remake. I mean, I haven't played any of it yet. I've heard pretty substantial things about how this section of the remake ends. I don't like blatantly know how it ends, but I've heard like some things that they're taking it to some pretty weird places. I'm gonna just go ahead and throw out a prediction for how like this entire like remake saga ends. I don't think they're gonna kill her.
Ooh!
I don't think she dies.
In
this remake.
That would be pretty extreme.
Yeah, this is one of like the most like iconic parts of the original.
Yeah.
But they don't...
Like, that messed me up as a kid. I was not expecting that when the first time I saw that. I was like, whoa!
I totally was expecting it, because you told me about it.
Oh, yeah, I did.
No, I think that they're gonna... Like, when they're talking about this game as a remake, I think they're going to take it in a very different direction when they do like the rest of it. So, well, let's where do you think they go after this? Like, this remake, this episode one of the remake is supposed to be the Midgar episode. Like, how...
Yeah, so it's supposed to go up until when they leave Midgar.
Yeah. How much more of the game do they do after that? Do they try to do this game in two parts? Does this game...
Oh, I doubt that. There's way too much after Midgar for them to do it in two parts.
Yeah.
Which, I want to know where they would end Disc 2, maybe at the City of the Ancients, because that was the end of Disc 1, right?
In the original, yeah.
Yeah, so they probably want to do like Disc 1 in two parts.
But you cover so much ground in Disc 1 in Final Fantasy VII. By the time you get to Disc 2, you've been most places, and Disc 2 is a lot of like retreading to places you've been and doing new things in them. And like Disc 3 is just basically the ending. There's really not much in Disc 3 in Final Fantasy VII Original.
I mean, they're probably going to try to tie things up. I'm going to guess three games. They're going to do...
have like a trilogy?
Disc 1 Midgar, Disc 2 up to the City of Ancients, and they'll probably just wrap everything up with Disc 3.
Hmm.
I mean... no, that seems too tough. I mean, it depends on how much of the places and how much of the original story they want to...
I mean, it's, especially when you consider like the scope of this episode that they did. They took a section of the game that's maybe 6 or 7 hours.
And just made it like 30.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
And they almost quadrupled the content there. So do they do that same sort of thing with like, you're like, do they have the opportunity to do that sort of thing? Because like after you leave Midgar, like the next town you go to is Calm, and that's a very small town. You go to the Chocobo Farm, you go through that cave. Maybe they take it up to Junon, or after you go to Junon, you get on the boat and then you go to Costa del Sol. Like at that point of the game, like even though you go to the open world, you still like are on a pretty set path. Like you have to go to these places in order. There's no real deviation from it.
Uh-huh.
So maybe they go up to the Gold Saucer. I mean, that's a pretty substantial chunk of game.
Yeah, there is so much stuff they have to touch on. Yeah, this has got to be a lot of discs.
Maybe that's... If I were going to throw down a prediction, I would say that they go up to the Gold Saucer to the point where like you have to like fight Dine. So you kind of like get a, like a an ending with Barrett, because that seems like maybe a pretty good closing spot. And then, like, the next... The third episode starts with, like, okay, well, now we have to go to... what's Red 13's town with Bugenhagen?
Cosmo Canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, like, the next thing. Okay, we got to go to Cosmo Canyon, then Nibelheim, and...
Hmm. I just hope it doesn't take them 5 years per game. That's what I hope. I'll give you two years. Come out with episode two. Don't.
I think that's a totally.
Make us wait.
I think that's a totally fair amount of time. Like this game came out in April 2020. By 2022, they should have another episode. Like
they really should. Like don't make us wait that long on this other part. It'd be insane.
Have we established on this show, making games is easy and anyone can do it.
Yeah, it's
so
simple. I mean, come on.
Get to
come
it.
Come on, guys.
How do you are there summons in the?
There are summons. I think there's only, based on what I've seen very briefly. I don't have any yet because again, I only just got done with the first mission. Mm-hmm. Then Tifa like takes you to this apartment right next to hers, and she's like, "Hey, the owner is a sympathizer to the cause. Here, this is your place," and so you got a place essentially to wrap up your days. And he immediately, like, after the first night there, he hears something at his next-door neighbor. He goes over there and immediately hallucinates Seth Roth, fights the neighbor. He's got some weird tattoo on him, which spurs some kind of memory, and it's a weird thing.
One of the Sephiroth clones, then.
Yeah, like, it says, like, 49 on his arm or something like that. So
he needs to go to Reunion.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Stuff's going on. It's odd. It's odd. The place is... They did a good job in making it feel big, like a big city. Because in the original, Midgar didn't feel like it was a big city. Because, you know, it was an old PS1 game.
Oh, yeah.
But this city, like, feels gigantic, and it's great.
Where was I going? Oh, does the materia level up?
Yes, it does.
Is it based on just, like... experience that you're getting at the end of a fight, or is it the more you use it, the better it gets?
I'm guessing, because there's not, like, your little finishing screen like you do on every fight in the original.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just pretty much hack them up and then off you go. You just see enemies and you can avoid them if you want, or just run and get them. Right now, I haven't been able to avoid them because they're small streets and stuff, but they haven't designed a point to avoid. Just go kill them.
Now, how much do you, like, do they give you, like a little, like, a little message in your HUD? How much experience or money that you just obtained from a fight?
I don't know. I haven't really paid attention to that. It's just, it's kind of hectic. I'm not used to the combat.
Hmm.
And there's a lot going on to manage in it. Like, where all the enemies are, when to block, you got your active time bar to pay conscious of, you got your health bars, which they're pretty small in the corner of the screen. And so at times I'm like, oh, I'm almost dead. Like, I didn't even notice. And that boss fight with the scorpion just beat the tar out of me. I burned through almost every healing item I had. It was a rough fight. I'm sure people listening will be like, oh, it's no big deal for me. I'm like, well, that's special. I thought it was a really tough fight.
I'm
excited to see where this goes.
A lot of what I've heard about this game is that it is tough. There's
just a lot to manage going on, and certain things I'm like, should I braver this or should I just cast fire on the guy? Like, it's there's a lot to be conscious of in the fights. Mm. There's a lot of different mechanics. There's some enemies that have shields, and so you have to like figure out how to get through their shields and stuff. There are certain enemies with different mechanics and everything. It's not like the original. Like, it's very different.
Now, is it something like Octopath Traveler, where you have to like knock down their shields with a weakness?
I'm guessing those enemies are best for. It's just like anything with these hack and slash kind of games, where sometimes you get enemies like that, and you need to bait out attacks to get them vulnerable, or the stagger mechanic can go into effect as well.
Hmm.
But it's just like anything. I figure out this particular unit's attack patterns and adjust accordingly.
Hmm.
You have a very faint dodge. It's not like a Dark Souls dodge where I'm going to be able to roll out of danger.
It's more like a sidestep?
Yeah, it's kind of like a sidestep.
Hmm. Is there a lock-on?
There is a lock-on. And it does work pretty well, but with the way that it is, it's just like an open street. It's very easy to lose enemies. You'll be hacking away at one guy and be like, where did this guy come from?
Hmm.
He's just in the corner and you just didn't. It's very easy to lose count of what you're dealing with.
Sure.
But it's just like any hack and slash. You just go and go.
Well, that was something that reminds me of Trials of Mana. Is like there's a lock-on system to where, you know, you target the enemy. But it's not like how you'd think of like even some like a Legend of Zelda lock-on system where you Z-target it. Because what it will do is it will lock onto an enemy, but then if a different enemy comes within your vicinity that's closer, like if you target an enemy that's further away and an enemy like closes that distance, it will change your target. And that's that's annoying. Because sometimes you want to take out a specific enemy, like take out the flying enemies first, is usually a pretty good strategy in Trials of Mana. And there have been times where I've tried using the lock-on system, but then it keeps on flipping between targets so often. It's like, never mind, just turn it off. And I don't know, maybe there's something in the settings where I can tell it to just like, no, just take the one that I pick and don't change it until it's dead. Because that would be a much better way of handling it. But pretty much, like, I don't use a lock-on system until I'm like in a one-on-one fight. Like, if there's mm-hmm. a fight with a rando enemy that's got some defense, it's going to take a couple of seconds to take out. I'll lock onto it so I don't lose track of it. Or if I'm fighting a boss that likes to move around, I'll lock onto that. But like, if I'm in a fight with 3, 4, 5 enemies, like, no, never mind. It's not even worth it.
Yeah, that's typically what I find as well with a lot of those kind of lock-on kind of systems and stuff. But man, how good was Ocarina of Time's lock-on system?
Nailed it on their first try.
It really did. It's better than like some games nowadays.
Yep.
Like, oh, that's so good.
Yep. So, anything else about Final Fantasy VII before we close it out here?
I'm excited to see where it goes. There's a lot going on with this. But yeah, I'm pumped. It's just that World of Warcraft wasn't soaking up all my time.
You should stop playing. Cut it out.
It's just like I got dailies to do, and I got this to do, I gotta run this raid, and it's just, there's so much to do.
That sounds a lot like Animal Crossing, actually.
It's so addicting, though. Yeah, except Animal Crossing, you can touch and play it for like 20 minutes and be good. This, like, if you don't have at least 2 hours to put into it, it's not worth it.
Yeah, you know, like Animal Crossing, and I'm sure me and Ryan will get into it, when the three of us are back recording again in a few days. Animal Crossing, like, the past couple of days, like the past maybe 3 or 4 days, I found myself putting a lot more time in it than I usually did, because, you know, for the first 4 weeks, it'd be like 45 minutes. I'd play one time, maybe an hour and 15 minutes on a longer day. But, like, now I'll jump in and play for, like, an hour in the morning, then I'll jump in the afternoon and play for another half hour, and then maybe I'll jump in later that night and play for another hour or half hour, depending on what I want to do. And, like, a lot of times it's just like, let's just catch some fish. Let's just catch some bugs. And it's just, like trivial, meaningless stuff that doesn't even, like, yield all that great of rewards. Like, I don't even get that much money from selling this stuff. Or, you know, like, maybe just like, okay, I want to do a raid, which is what me and Dez call is, like, going to a random island and harvesting all of its resources and leaving it a deserted wasteland. But there's something about the game where, like, the things that you're doing are so simple that it's like, yeah, I might as well just, like, I'd rather do this than start up a game that's going to take me an hour to get into and get some momentum in.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Like, in World of Warcraft today, Jeff and I spent over 2 hours doing island expeditions, which they are, in a way to gauge strength, your characters have item levels, your eye level, and that roughly tells you how strong you are. Because, you know, the higher eye level an item, the better stats it gives you. And so the island expeditions, the units are around 385 item level, and Jeff and I are over 400, and so we're just flying through these, and it doesn't really give us anything. And the only reason why we were doing this was because there's a very faint chance that mounts would drop. And they're just the things you ride around on. That's all it is. Like, and there was no real benefit to doing it.
Okay.
But Jeff and I just sat there and did it for a while today. You got a cool mount? I got nothing, but...
You know, there's...
That's just the kind of crap that... Why are we doing these things, John? Why are we catching bugs for hours?
There is something soothing to that sort of, like, repetitive loop. And, you know, not every game should be like that, but, you know, everyone who plays a lot of games should have at least a game like that, to where they don't really have to think about what they're doing. It's something that, like... It allows you to unplug from, like, a lot of, like, complex and hectic mechanics. And it lets you appreciate the stuff that offers a lot of variety. Because you have something to contrast it with, I think.
Or in the case of Ryan, there's things to do while you're asleep.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, with that that controller of his. Staring up at the night sky, just continuously pressing A.
Uh-huh. I wonder... He must have. It must be because the game is getting inputs. Because there was a point when I wasn't playing Animal Crossing in the morning because I was doing a homeschooling session with Mika. But I left the game running with me on the island because there were a couple of guys from the Discord group who might swing by for a visit. So I was like, okay, I'll open up the island gates. I'll just lay here in this hammock, and if anyone wants to, like, come in and poke around, they'll be able to do that. But after, like, 30 or 45 minutes, the game just, like, went into sleep mode. But it must be because he's got that constant input of that controller that he's got. It lets the game keep on going. But anyway, more on Animal Crossing on the next show. I think that's the end of this one.
That's fair.
All right.
Just a little tiny little mini show. Just a little touch on stuff.
Yeah, and you know, we went for 45 minutes on these two games. So that's that's 45 minutes that we won't have to spend on these games in the next show. So, you know, we'll have two more digestible shows back to back here.
Yeah, it's nice and easy.
Yep. So, till next time, everybody.
So long.